I would say I think it's pretty close. You know, a lot of rookies, they've just been really hooping this year. They've just been really balling out on their teams, helping their teams out. But I would say it's important to me to just try to, when rookie of the year, to try to start my legacy off right. That's just been a goal of mine to start the season. I would say it's something that we all should be trying to achieve and win.
The Fan Morning Show, SportsNet 590 The Fan, Blake Murphy, Ailish Forfar, J.D. Bunkus. That was Scotty Barnes claiming he wants that Rookie of the Year. That was the other day. We tee that up because it is the halfway point of the Toronto Raptors season. It doesn't really feel that way, but it's a natural spot to kind of check in and see where they're at the halfway mark.
With Will Liu, who got up early, and I will say, you know, Blake really came through for Will yesterday because he's getting up at 8 o'clock. Blake told me that he did your show, Will, with a drool mouth, that he had just gone to the dentist, that he could barely speak. Do you view that as like something where he came through for you, or do you view that as, you know, he put his own selfish needs to be on your show ahead of the good thing, which is like it's a player when they're hurt and they know that they shouldn't be playing and they kind of selfishly play the game? Like, how do you view this? Good teammate, bad teammate? Where were you at with Blake playing hurt yesterday?
No, that's Blake being a great teammate, as always. I didn't even know. I thought he was just sleepy from the morning.
No, I had dental work yesterday. I didn't know that they were going to freeze my mouth. And they were like, I walked out of there maybe 11:30. I was like, do I have to cancel my 2 o'clock radio? And they're like, no, it should be fine by then. It should be fine. Just drink lots of water. Meanwhile, I'm trying to drink water. It's like dripping out of my mouth because my mouth is frozen. We're talking about
still came
Liu.
Through for you.
Yeah, that was on the Raptors show, which you can hear every day, 2 to 3 on Sports at 590 The Fan. And this insider is brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit DonValleyNorthLexus.com. William Liu, we brought you in with Scotty Barnes claiming, yeah, of course I want the Rookie of the Year award. We're at the halfway point here. By the odds makers, Evan Mobley is a pretty significant favorite at this point. Scotty Barnes checks in at second in Rookie of the Year odds, plus 350. Do you agree with him sitting second in the race right now? And to his point, do you think he can catch Evan Mobley in the second half of the season here?
Yeah, I agree with him being second to Evan. I think, you know, both rookies are in very special cases where they're impacting winning. You know, they're not just putting up numbers for, like, for example, you know, Cade Cunningham, 15-5-5. I mean, but, you know, the Pistons are the Pistons. So, you know, Evan's part of a winning program with Cleveland, and he's, you know, a big part of their turnaround this year. Scotty Barnes is also a big part of the Raptors winning this year as well. So I would say between the two, Evan's definitely having a bigger defensive impact. I think that was kind of anticipated coming into this year that, you know, this is going to be one of those generational defensive talents. And I think so far, even as a rookie, he's shown that. But I think Scottie can still have a pretty good chance here of catching Evan, depending on sort of what happens with the two teams. And honestly, depending on what Scottie does over the rest of the season, because I think Scottie probably has a higher offensive upside right now. To me, I think because he's a more of a ball handler, he's more of a guy who can initiate a little bit more of his own offense. You know, he has the chances to put up 20-point games and string a couple of them together, which could really propel him here. And I think the Raptors want to see that from him as well. I mean, I know that, you know, what people have been saying, you know, Scotty Barnes doing the little Marc Gasol role. It's like, that's cute. That really is cute. But, like, we all know that Scotty can do a little bit more than, like, let's say a 35-year-old, 36-year-old Marc Gasol was doing towards the end for the Raptors. And even just seeing him back for that game, you know, against Miami, I thought he got himself into great positions. He just missed a couple of bunnies, but he took 18 shots. And, you know, depending on the way teams want to play the Raptors right now with, you know, Pascal seeing double teams and Fred seeing double teams, like, someone else is going to have to do a lot of that scoring. And I think this is going to set up Scottie to have some pretty good chances to put up numbers. So I think, yeah, he is second right now. He might be even a close second in terms of with Cade coming on strong as well. Franz Wagner is also having a great year with Orlando individually, although, again, his team is also pretty bad. But, yeah, they've been 1-2 all season, Evan and Scotty.
Do you worry about a little bit of fatigue with Scotty Barnes in terms of running out of fumes down the stretch? You know, he's played a lot of minutes, and there's also the natural rookie tiredness that might happen. And he wasn't even a starter on a college team last year. Like, do you consider any of that being something that might taper his option or his availability to be the guy down the line?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a natural concern I have from almost every rookie. I think it's probably the same for Evan. Right. I mean, like, Scotty played more, like, minutes in about the first 6 weeks playing with the Raptors than he did all of college. So I think it's obviously a big adjustment. Obviously, Nick Fitz is also, you know, going with the six-man rotation these days. So Scotty's just playing 40 minutes just regularly. He's averaging 35.6 minutes per game on the season. You know, it's obviously a big adjustment, I think. I think my more concern is just, like, is he fully healthy, you know? And, you know, maybe it's a lot to ask any NBA player to be fully healthy in January after playing 41 games. But I think with Scotty, we've seen him miss some time with the knee tendonitis. Sometimes you see him moving around. He's not, like, the spryest, even though he'll, like, clearly be when he needs to be. When he hits top gear athletically, he can definitely, like, change ends of the court with, like, three dribbles, which is pretty incredible. But at the same time, you do wonder, of like, okay, is this knee thing is going to be a lingering issue? Is he need a bit of time? You know, I guess All-Star break is coming up in about a few weeks, so maybe he can recoup then. But yeah, you do wonder, sort of where he is at physically and, you know, all that. But to be honest, that's something for the team to manage, and that's something for Scotty to learn, because that's one of the biggest things for every rookie to adapt to is, I mean, this is the NBA. You're going to have to play a lot, and you're going to be effective and want to have things like, you know, rookie of the year or all stars in the future. You got to learn how to play big minutes and be effective in them.
So I find it interesting that Blake and Ailish wanted to start with Scotty Barnes, because one of the reasons we wanted to have you on is that it's this like check-in at the midway mark, right? So mm-hmm. a couple of, hey, what are we doing here? What do we care about here? What are we feeling right now halfway through the season? And I kind of want to ask you, do you feel like halfway in that you have a better understanding of the clarity of purpose of this season or the direction that this team is going to take? Because we're talking about Scotty Barnes, and as we're doing this, Siakam and Van Vliet are probably playing their best as they've ever been as Raptors players. And that we're starting with the rookie, that we're starting with rookie of the year, it still feels a little muddied in terms of like the overall direction of this team. Again, do you feel 41 games in that you have a better handle of it, or is it even more confusing to you than it was at the beginning of the year?
No, I mean, I don't think it's necessarily confusing. I think what you're referring to is, like, you know, the Raptors talking about this being a developmental year. Masai said that. And, you know, I think that could mean a lot of things, right? Developmental year could just mean, like, we're going to tank this year and, you know, try to get another Scotty Barnes in the draft and stuff like that. And, you know, I think clearly for, like, a team like Detroit or Orlando, like, it's, like, that's a developmental year. I think for the Raptors, maybe they came into it with some sort of perspective as to, like, hey, if all things, you know, go wrong again, you know, we'll say, what did Masai say last year? You know, play in for what? Like, they might play in for what again? But clearly, I think a lot of things have broken right in terms of, look, there's a clear reason why the Raptors are only one game above 500. And to me, that is because their second unit is just so bad. Their core five, though, when we're talking about Fred, Pascal, OG, Scotty, and I would include Gary in this only because he signed to a longer-term deal as well. Their core five, Each of those five players have taken steps forward this year. Fred is playing, as you mentioned, the best basketball of his career. He's probably poised to go to the All-Star game. He's been one of the most prolific three-point shooters in the NBA, period. Only two players have taken more threes per game than Fred, and those are Steph and Dame. And amongst like the 14 NBA players who are attempting more than eight threes per game, and Fred's at 9.6. Fred's the only one shooting above 40%. From three, it's kind of absurd how efficient he's been from three. Pascal, obviously, especially of late, has just become this like triple-double guy consistently against top defenses. He's definitely playing his best basketball. OG, I know there's probably still – he probably is the one guy where you see more ups and downs for him, but I think overall for him to jump his scoring about 4 points per game up to 19, still be a really effective defender. You know, there's definitely a lot of good things there to work with OG. Gary has taken his game forward. And then Scotty, even just compared to, like, what draft analysts were saying about Scotty at the time of the draft, even compared to what he showed in college, in this short amount of time between him at Florida State last year and him right now as a Raptor in 2022, he has shown a huge improvement as well. So those are the core five that you need to see something from, and all five of those guys have taken a step forward. And that's why the Raptors are in a position right now where they're 21-20. And you look at them and you say, well, are they really developing? I think they are developing. All the key guys are developing. The issue is they have no second unit to support them. So Nick has the choice between let's be less competitive and play Svee and play Utah and play, you know, Malachi and Delano, or we, you know, try to have a chance to win games against some top teams. And ultimately that means we play six guys. So I think from that perspective, the front office needs to make a decision like, hey, is there enough to believe in this core? And if so, can we just add one or two pieces here? Maybe not like veteran short-term additions, maybe even look for a long-term solution, a backup guard or anything like that, because this team clearly has something. Like, the core of this group clearly works.
So you mentioned a couple times right there about that second unit and how obviously there's quite the drop-off. How do you think that they can address that weakness? Like, what kind of moves or what kind of configurations can they have so then it's not such a significant, you know, downfall of their roster line?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a great question. I think that's probably something the front office is asking themselves regularly, each day. And I think for me, I would say you need to address the backup guard position, someone who can come in and hit a couple of threes, maybe make a couple of plays for you, maybe probably more of a two guard than maybe as a point guard. Because right now, I think between Fred playing 38 minutes per game as the lead point guard and then Pascal and his ability to sort of play a little bit of backup guard, we've seen him really be able to distribute and create for others. And even Scottie Barnes is also a pretty good secondary playmaker. You kind of just need another guy around them to shoot. And so clearly you would want, let's say, someone on the roster to do that for you. But between Svee missing threes and Utah missing threes, it's just been very frustrating of late. So I think I'm looking at the $19 million that Goran Dragic is holding and trying to see if a team wants to, you know, maybe give up on some long-term salary, and you take on a little bit of long-term salary for an expiring deal with Goran. Or honestly, like, depending on which guard it is, I wouldn't even mind giving up a protected first-round pick in the future, because it's not, again, it's not really about getting a veteran guard for this year in particular and trying to make a push, because we know the Raptors aren't going to win a championship this year, with all due respect to the guys. They're not going to win a championship this year. This is not a year to kind of push all in. But the thing is, whether it's, this season or next season or beyond, there's still not a backup guard option on the team that I will feel comfortable enough to say, well, there's a three-man guard rotation that we have here that can cover most of the minutes there. They still don't have that guy. So if they want to use a first-round pick, protect it, and get somebody back, along with some expiring salaries that they have, whether they want to trade Chris Boucher, who right now obviously is playing out of his mind, but he's expiring, and I don't know if the front office necessarily wants to re-sign him, or Goran, who's definitely, he's not even literally here. Get somebody to come in, especially at the guard position, to help them score a little bit. Because, you know, realistically, I mean, a six-man rotation might work in a Game 7 situation, but you're just not going to be able to do that sustainably over the course of even, like, 2 weeks in the regular season. So you need to get somebody to come in and put up a couple of buckets.
So I want to ask this question to you and Blake. Do you guys think that maybe it's a little bit underrated then, given where we are? Because I agree with what you say, Will, about like everybody that really is supposed to matter for this team has taken a positive step forward. And so there are some caveats here, like the Raptors have been banged up. They started the season with a bunch of injuries. I don't know what they expected really to get out of Goran Dragic when they traded for him, whether or not there actually was ever some hope that he was going to play, how much of a handle they had on the situation when they did acquire him. Malachi Flynn not working within the organization, but again, that should be maybe something they have a handle on. You look at the Raps right now, and yeah, you said it, the top five, the top six, it's working. It's working, and they've all taken a step, and they're a competitive team. And what's really hurting them right now is the lack of a bench. And that sort of feels like something that it's an easier thing to do than it is to acquire star level talent, is to have a competent bench. Given where they're at right now, do you think that it's maybe like an underrated or a fair criticism to say, hey, actually this team should have done a better job building its depth?
Yeah, I'll go first. I mean, I think to me, this speaks to the front office's approach. I think they really wanted to take some flyers on some guys who, you know, like a Steve Mihalik, for example, you know, had some decent-ish results in some, like, losing situations, but young enough, you know, 24, he can, I guess, theoretically shoot. Come in and see what you can do, right? You give a spot to Delano on the bench. And I thought he started the season really positively, but he's sort of really fallen off here a little bit and probably needs more time in the G League more than anything else. Then Malachi Flynn, you give him a spot because last year, okay, you know, he finished the season strong. Yeah, a lot of those games were like, you know, I would say a lot of teams were tanking during that stretch. But still, like, take nothing away from him. He was putting up, like, 20 and 12 assists sometimes, some of that. Like, you know, there's something there. Clearly, you want to see what happens there. And you know, Isak Vanga, you take a sort of flyer on. You know, David Johnson's on the roster as well. Like, you know, these kind of guys. And realistically, like, you take all these flyers on these guys. Like, none of these guys have a proven track record of being productive in a even in a bench role for the NBA, right? So you kind of need some of these guys to hit. And the situation is you've just taken a lot of small bets, and none of them have really paid off. And, you know, I think the Raptors bench is really inexpensive. Like, they're not really paying a lot of money to anybody except for Goran, who was only there to match salaries. Like, that's the only reason he was in the deal. They just wanted to get Precious. The bench is fairly bad. I mean, I think maybe in a different world, if Goran came in and said, wow, I love Toronto. I've always wanted to play here. There's a huge Slovenian population here in the city, maybe, you know, and I want to come here and run backup point for you. Maybe if you take his regular production, you take Chris Boucher, what he's doing right now, and mix in a little bit of, you know, Justin Champagne, and maybe if Ken Burch stayed healthy, like, maybe that's kind of a capable bench, but clearly he didn't have any intentions even coming into the season. Like, he even said he has higher ambitions than playing for the Raptors. And I know, like, there was a lot of, like, PR work afterwards to be like, oh, I didn't really mean that. You know, it means something different in my language, whatever. It means what it means, man. I think it was pretty clear what he was trying to say. So his actions have spoken even more loudly towards that. So the bench is the bench. And, Blake, I don't know, you know, what you think, but even long term, I'm not really sure we can move forward with a lot of these pieces that the Raptors have existing.
And that's, you know, there are a couple reasons why. And one is that one of my issues with some of these end of bench flyers was that they're also on, like, player friendly terms. Like, if you hit on Bonga, for example, and he looks like a capable bench piece, he's a free agent. Svi has a player option somehow. So I don't. And then, you know, as a matter of building, I understand for sure that the Raptors are tight to the luxury tax and there's not a ton of flexibility until post trade deadline when you see what's going to happen with Dragic and when you see, you know, what might happen in other spots. But if you are in a developmental year, and I think they are, even though they're a competitive, you know, one game above 500 team, you look at how young the depth is here. I think they're clearly in a developmental year and they're using those back end spots to find guys. I don't know how you justify rolling the whole season with one roster spot that could have been used on another developmental guy or another flyer open. And then also the Dragic thing where you're basically running two roster spots short. So if this year is about trying guys out and finding things and seeing, hey, you know, you're maybe not trying to find the next Fred or Pascal for your starting lineup, but maybe you're trying to find the next Yuta who can graduate from G League to, hey, if he's your 10th man, you're in an okay spot. I haven't, you know, like, Bonga hasn't really done much. He's dominating the G League, but we figured that would happen.
Hey, now, Bing Bonga.
He hasn't been very good. But mostly, like, my issue from the process side is if that's your strategy, you should be leaning into that strategy fully. And this is a couple seasons now. And yes, there's the COVID element. There's the less revenue element. There's the proximity to the luxury tax element. There's a couple seasons in a row now. The Raptors have punted on a couple roster spots that could have been used toward that developmental end. So I think there's a bit of inconsistency in what the depth strategy is here. And so more than, you know, you're going to miss on players in this tier all the time. Sometimes they're going to hit. Sometimes Stanley Johnson becomes LeBron James's best teammate. Like, sometimes weird stuff happens in these spots, but you're going to miss sometimes. So for me, it's more that there's not, you know, there's not like a cohesion to that developmental strategy the last 2 years, the way there was so definitively in the lead up to, like, through, say, 2020. So, Will, I want to ask you one more thing before we let you off here. So we talked about some reasons for optimism here, some reasons for pessimism. The Raptors are a game over 500. It's the halfway mark. So let's just reset kind of your expectation for the rest of the season. I think you were with me. I had them right around 500 entering the year. I think I actually picked them to go 41-41, which is over their 36.5. If you were to revise your prediction, both in terms of record and where they land in the Eastern Conference, has anything changed for you over half a season?
I guess not that much. Like I also kind of anticipated them being in this range. I think I probably had them maybe like two or three games over 500, which I think maybe honestly you look back on some of the games this season, you say, well, that's totally a possible outcome that we could be having this exact conversation with the Raptors at that mark. Right now, I think the only thing for me is a little surprising is just like they haven't been as efficient defensively as I thought they would be. Like I thought they would really win a ton of games based on how strong their defense was. And their defense is, you know, average, league average. They're 18th in defensive rating per Basketball Reference, which is fine. You know, I think clearly they have a pretty high defensive ceiling when you look at what they've done in recent games, holding Phoenix under 100. Even the way they guarded Miami, I thought was mostly pretty good. The way they guarded Milwaukee, you know, they did a really good job keeping them under 100 as well. But in reality, the Raptors' offense has been better than kind of what people expected. I thought the Raptors might be like 20th in offense, 10th in defense, maybe even 5th in defense. You know, I thought honestly there was a real high ceiling there. But I think between the injuries and honestly just a couple of guys, maybe not like understanding the scheme that quickly, the defense hasn't been as strong so far. So maybe if the defense continues to improve, honestly the Raptors can finish even better. And then the other part is just like, you know, how healthy some of these guys going to stay. And I think at least for now, it seems like they've got their COVID stuff out of the way. So, you know, knock on wood, hopefully that's, you know, something that continues to stay like that. But they're also running a really short rotation. So you'll see like if Gary Trent Jr. goes down for a couple games because he has a swollen ankle, the Raptors just don't have shooting. You know, it's tough because they only have like 6 players that they can turn to. But yeah, like I think they got to stay healthy as well. But honestly, I think we probably had some reasonably optimistic expectations of the Raptors heading into the season, and so far the halfway mark they've hit those. So if they stay healthy, they bring in another bench guard, and let's say their defense improves to the point where we know they have a higher ceiling on defense than they've sort of shown so far game to game, then yeah, maybe the Raptors, you know, sneak into the situation where they're 6. I think that would be a huge success for the Raptors this season if they can avoid the play-in tournament and make the playoffs.
Okay, quick. You have 1 second to think about the answer. What is your favorite sporting venue in the world?
Favorite sporting venue in the world? The Bird's Nest in Beijing. They built it for the 2008 Olympics. That was pretty cool to see.
Okay.
Yeah.
We just did a draft, and I know you were sleeping, so I just wanted to know what your thoughts were. Nobody picked that, though, so congrats. You win.
There you go. Yeah, I always got to represent.
But thanks so much. All right, William Liu, host of the Raptor Show and friend of our show. Thanks for joining us this morning. Go back to bed.
All right. Thank you.
That Insider is brought to you by Don Valley North Lexus, where you can expect excellence online and in the showroom. Visit donvalleynorthlexus.com.
I find maybe we should elaborate on this more tomorrow because we have the Wake and Rake coming up here, and I don't want to step too much on it. But the more that I reflected on the Raptors heading into this segment and the whole midway mark thing, right? Because normally in sports, it's kind of just a bit of a cliche thing, and we've already discussed most of the stuff that's been surprising or the things that have been disappointing. Mm-hmm. You know, you cover a team on a daily basis the way that we do. You have discussions, and yeah, you've kind of hit on a lot of the notes. But one thing I found myself sort of reflecting on here is that it actually has been incredibly strange. The Raptors are record-wise where they're supposed to be, but none of it has really been what I expected. Like, they suck at defense. They've had moments where they've been good, but overall, the defense has been comparatively from what I thought it was going to be, which is that this was going to be the rock fight team, that it has been a wildly underwhelming defensive team. This is a group that is incredible with finding diamonds in the rough. Can't find one. Hasn't found a single one this year. Not a single player outside of, like, truly, and I mean this genuinely, outside of Justin Champagne's rebounding, I don't think that there's, like, an NBA asset guy on the bench. Like, I kind of like Utah in moments, but then he also has played so terribly of late that I'm shaken a bit in that belief. I don't think that there's much there. Like, I don't. And if we're talking about development, like, look at what they've done with Malachi Flynn. This is terrible. Like, this is not a good way to use a first-round pick. Blake's talking about two slots that they haven't been using even for development. Like, it feels like that has been a core thing about the Raptors that is now sort of missing. And the offense has been better. Fred's offense is amazing. Pascal's offense has been amazing. Those guys have taken real steps. Scotty Barnes, we're talking about him with the Rookie of the Year stuff, not because of his defense, which we thought was going to be his, like, calling card. We're talking about it because of his offense. His offense is way ahead of schedule. OG's offense is, again, ahead of schedule. Gary Trent, at the beginning of the year, it was a little bit of defense and the deflections and the steals, but ultimately it's, hey, this guy's progressing as someone who can fit in within the greater context of an offense that doesn't have to be the guy and isn't as playing as selfishly. Like, those core players, which I guess matter the most, have all been positive stories, and yet the record is what it is. And also, what I sort of find, I don't think it's confusing, but maybe a little bit difficult to grapple with, is how they're in a developmental year and yet they're capped out. And I know that that has to do with Dragic. Like, again, there's things in this that are easy to understand, but what does that say about the ceiling or where you go next if you can't find depth within the organization? Should you have done a better job of having that depth and not just relying on purely flyers around your group, especially one that did need a Scotty Barnes to be what Scotty Barnes is this year to stay afloat? Like, now that I'm kind of looking at it at the midway mark, it sort of feels like there actually was a failing. And I know that this is, like, taboo to even say in the city. Kind of feels like there was a bit of a failing by Masai Ujiri and co. and Bobby Webster to supplement these guys with just a little bit more NBA talent around the fringes. Like, honestly, going in here with Delano Banton and Malachi Flynn, who they knew... Malachi Flynn wasn't a development of this year. This was a... We knew what was going to happen with this dude going into the season. He was already down the depth chart. They knew what was going on with Goran Dragic. They knew the roster. And so it's like, Blake, I love the way you put it, where it was, hey, this is a developmental year, but why not some of the calling cards of an actual developmental year? Like... Yeah, I don't know. I think the Raptors are better than maybe their own people knew, and that's now highlighting how they sort of blew it with the bench and the depth.
And it's a pretty stark contrast to how they operated in the kind of the ramp up, and then even the championship and the post-championship year, where, you know, we're legitimately looking at Jody Meeks again and be like, well, he can hit threes for the 905. Maybe he can play those 80 seconds the second quarter again.
Calls him Jordy Meeks.
Jordy Meeks. There you go. This is kind of the story to watch in the second half for me with the Raptors is, if they get healthy at any point, does the depth look a little more stable? And, you know, you can't run a six-man rotation for a full half season. So at some point, they're going to have to give someone opportunities, or they're going to have to address it in trade over the next 3 weeks and change. So those are a couple things to watch. Tonight, you'll be able to watch the Raptors taking on Luka Doncic and the Dallas Mavericks. I don't know. Maybe that's a triple-double prop play. We'll see. The Leafs also have the New York Rangers. We're going to set those up. We're going to review last night's Wake and Rake and give you some picks for tonight. All that's next. The Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Sports at 590, The Fan, Blake Murphy, Caleb Porfar, JD Bunkus, Lil Wayne, T-Pain. And if you're listening on Spotify because you're subscribed to the podcast, you won't know what song's playing. You can figure it out. It's always a money song for the Wake and Rake segment. And if you're not listening on the podcast, thank you for listening live. But go subscribe, rate, review, all that good stuff. Appreciate the feedback. Also appreciate that we didn't have the sharpest of Wake and Rakes last night. We went 1-2. But... you know, we avoided those. Look, a lot of people have been sending in their wins and celebrating that. Glad that people seem to understand that sometimes you're going to have a rough one. The 1-2 night, by the way, because I have, you know, some OCD stuff around numbers, it was very satisfying to me because our exact picks now on the season for the Wake and Rake are exactly 66.666666666 repeating percent. So we are exactly 2 of 3 on an average night. No decimals, no rounding. 2 of 3. We had to get the 1-2 night. And look, if we go 3-0 tonight, we got to get a 1-2-1 the next night to get us right back there. So 66.7% for the Wake and Rake picks overall. We now move to – that was only our fourth time, though, where we had two misses on the same night. So rare – yeah.
Rare night. Yeah, so all I can think of as an Iron Maiden fan is 666, the number of the beast, and how that's now the way we are as a show, right? Like, we are that percentage, 2 of 3, almost every time. I also think that, listen, not to make excuses, all right? Hand up. Dallas Stars, didn't matter. They got, I guess, Steven Montembeau making 1,000 saves against the Dallas Stars, who stink.
Totally predicted that one.
Well... Yeah, the process versus results. So, but hand up. No excuses, bad loss. Didn't even really love the bet. Said I had a bad vibe around it. Should have just gone with the other picks. Ailish, the thing is like Ailish and I end up going with our only two picks that were wrong for the Wake and Rake. Ailish and I also gave out Sabres plus money, win. Carolina Hurricanes plus money, win.
I parlayed Sabres and Hurricanes, both money line, both, and I said yesterday there are underdogs with plus money, and I won, and I should have just, you know, that was a free gift to the audience.
My heart pick that I betrayed in search of just picking against the Montreal Canadiens, the Minnesota Timberwolves, check mark. Check mark. So if you just, so it's kind of hard to get mad if you're an actual listener of the show, and this is why, hey, we don't tweet out these picks. And I've said this to people before, that because people DM me all the time going, hey, can you give me the picks? No. I'll tweet some picks out every once in a while. I'll put some on my Instagram always, especially on Sundays and before UFC cards. But no, listen to this segment. Subscribe to this podcast and listen to this. But yeah, overall, if you look at yesterday's show, Blake, you had that pick, but I went – essentially the picks that I gave yesterday went 3-4. Ailish's, the picks that she gave yesterday went 2-3. So overall, it's kind of one of those things where I go, yeah, the Wake and Rake missed, but overall the gambling advice in the segment was incredibly sound, as it has been pretty much – for every single one of these segments we've done, which is why we have the 666 winning percentage.
Yeah, and on my side, you know, it wasn't a super high confidence night, and even though I got the W in the Wake and Rake pick,
was it a close game?
Yeah, I mean, it was like enough of a sweat. Wisconsin's really good, I think. You know, that's they ended up winning 82-76.
You could have done the spread, but you were nervous about the spread. So
I was nervous about the spread, and then I had mentioned that Nance, one of their best players, was questionable. He ended up playing, so I would have gotten even closer to tip-off. I locked it in the morning when we were doing the show, but as we got closer to tip-off, I probably would have been a little less confident and nudged even further toward money line versus spread. But whatever you took, you got it there with Wisconsin, sweating that one out, moving to 15-2. And
also,
oh boy.
Are you going to say thank you?
For
me not playing. I didn't touch Wisconsin. I stayed true to my word. I told you that I've been cursed with college basketball, and I had a moment. I had a moment where I got weak. I was weak. I had a weak moment where I stared at it and I wanted to take it because Blakey's been red hot, and I liked the way he broke it down, and I'll show you my bet history. I didn't touch it. I'll open the DMs. I'll show you behind the curtain. I did not touch Wisconsin yesterday. A man of my word. Hand up. Say
I'll tell
thank
you. You thank you. And you teased me yesterday, like, oh, I think you like Johnny Davis. Well, look, man, when you bet a close game and Johnny Davis has 27 points on ridiculous efficiency, 8 rebounds and 3 steals, the love affair with Johnny Davis isn't going anywhere after that one. He played 38 minutes in that game out of 40. That was a big one. Okay, let's turn it to tonight. So again, 1-2 last night, 66.7% overall on the Wake and Rake season. We try to get back on track tonight. And we've got Raptors and Leafs. We've got
a homer's parlay, possibly.
We sure do. We'll see if we like it that much. Let's start with Leafs. Leafs minus 160 against the New York... Minus 155 it's gone down to since I took my notes. At the New York Rangers. Minus 110 if you like it in regulation for a little bit of extra risk there. 5.5 is the over-under. And I don't believe we've got any of the X's in this game, Ailish, for the just $5 approach.
Ooh,
how are you feeling about Leafs Rangers in general?
I'm feeling good for the Leafs. I know that it's a big matchup, but I don't know. It's the gut feeling. I go by the gut lately, and I'm feeling like they're in need of a good win, a little bit of a statement win. So I will be betting the Leafs just on the money line, not the spread, not going to play around with in regulation. I'm feeling confident that they can get a win over the Rangers today, and I look forward to watching them play. It's been a long time.
JD, I'm curious about your take specifically on the over-under, because it is 5.5. Yeah. It's leaning back towards 6. I know that this is a battle of maybe 1A and 1B in the Vezina race so far with Shesterkin against Jack Campbell. But does the Toronto Maple Leafs blue line situation for tonight give you some pause about the under, or maybe even push you to the over?
There's a couple things that give me that. One is that the Leafs are rested. They're coming back to the East Coast, and Austin Matthews is a ball of flames. They also have Mitch Marner back, and you have that group 5-on-5 absolutely dummying lines right now. Jack's been letting in more goals recently. Like, it's a fact. It's just a thing that has been happening. He has not been early season Jack Campbell. They're letting up a ton of shots. This isn't a scenario where you're blaming him in any way, but I think that over this last little stretch, he's got like a save of 906. And it's just, yeah, the Leafs are giving up a ton of volume. And as much as we like to rip on or criticize the way that Jake Muzzin and Justin Hall play, that's 40 minutes of defensemen that you just lost and that you're replacing with Travis Dermott and Alex Biega and Timothy Liljegren up the lineup, Rasmus Sandin up the lineup. To me, this is one where I usually don't love playing over totals in hockey. It's just one of those things, right? Like, I love playing overs in football, overs in basketball, unders in soccer, unders in hockey and baseball. It's like the weird thing that I prefer in those sports. But yeah, this is one where I'm kind of saying, if the path for me to lose a bet is getting goalied, then I'm going to take it. And so I think that you can get this number at 5.5, the over 5.5, especially considering like the idea that this game is tied 3-3 is really not outside the realm of possibility. Getting those extra couple of empty net goals, even if this is – I like the over in this game. It really did stand out to me. I thought it was going to be 6.5, and it's not. It's 5.5 leaning towards 6. So to me, that shows a little bit of value on the total, which is the over.
Well, a couple things to consider when you're betting tonight, which is making it a little bit difficult for me, is so Leafs are 10-4 in their last 14 road games and 22-7 in the last 29, but Rangers are 10-3 in their last 13 home games. So they're both coming in with like that little bit of an edge. And then the Rangers have beat the Leafs, I think the last 5 out of 7 times. Yes, 5 of the last 7 meetings against the Leafs. So they're always tight games. Like they've been quite close. They've been low scoring. I'm trying to find out that. But yeah, I think that makes it a little bit more difficult for me. I think the value is with the Rangers, though. Like if you want to make money, the Rangers are plus money. I think that they could easily win. But I'm going with like the homer mentality if I want the Leafs to win, which is why I'm betting them. But I definitely think if you're looking for a value pick, it would be the Rangers, because there's certainly a chance. Like they're a really good team. They could definitely win tonight.
So I mentioned the no natural just $5 candidate for you, Ailish. But if you're not super confident in the money line, let me throw this by you. Austin Matthews is -105 as an anytime goal scorer.
Yeah,
that's a implied probability of about 51%. He is averaging 0.76 goals per game this season. Over his last 16 games, he's scored in 13 of them and is averaging over a goal a game. And then obviously he has that historic 10 straight games scoring goal on the road. I'm not as much of a believer in that as it's just a very good goal scorer on a bit of a random streak, but 13 of his last 16 games, he's scored a goal. Do you like that as a just $5 for tonight?
I actually just went to click it and the odds changed to +100 for him to score a goal. So I am literally, as we speak, putting some money on that. Let's go.
I think if you bet Matthews on goals, just from a value standpoint, I think you bet over 1.5 at +410. That's the way that I'd be betting him if you're betting goals. I just don't think -105 is good enough for a goal scoring prop. When I play touchdown scores or unless you're doing a bet builder, like that's something I don't usually throw in there, is minus money props for touchdowns or goals, right? Like it brings me back to Ailish gave us the Cooper Kupp hit from that Arizona game on Monday night. And it's just like, I'll throw that in a bet builder. I did the same thing with Travis Kelce when the Chiefs played. I threw that in a bet builder. I'll never bet those ones outright. Usually I prefer to take like the Jerick McKinnon, which I hit at plus 300, right? Where I go, hey, I'm going to bet this as a standalone. So for me, if you're going to play Matthews in the ball of flame, I'm taking the over 1.5 at plus 410.
I have it at plus 550.
Whoa. There you go. So then I would definitely bet it at plus 550. Like, again, empty netter. Get me to that over 1.5 plus 510. Do I think that he can do that? It's a possibility for me. So that's the way I would play that.
That same 16 game streak I just said, he's had four multi-goal games there. So one every four. So if you're getting over plus 400 and you expect that trend to continue, there's maybe some edge there. Let's turn to the Raptors quickly before we make our wake and rake picks.
Oh,
Raptors are plus
thing?
Four. Pardon me?
I said I got my I promised that I would reveal my every game Raptors
bet. So let me tee up the game first. Raptors plus four at Dallas. On the Dallas side, Reggie Bullock and Maxi Kleber are questionable, and Gary Trent's questionable for the Raptors while Kem Birch is out. This is about as light as an injury report as you're going to get in today's NBA. So Toronto plus four at Dallas. JD, hit us with the Raptors daily, I guess we'll call it, prop you got here.
Okay, so I almost don't even like giving this out. Because it's just such a
selfish.
It's not even with this. It's just the theory is because eventually the books are going to catch up. But once again, the Siakam assist numbers are the Debo Samuel rush yards of the NBA, where the league or the books or whatever the hell, they keep looking at this guy like he's a power forward or he's a center, and that his assist totals are just way too low. Way too low. Same with Debo. They go, oh, Debo Samuel's a wide receiver. His rushing total is set at... I got Debo at 28.5 yards. That was that was the easiest bet of the weekend last week. Debo was at 28.5. I'm guessing that he'll be up over that now because it's national spotlight and it's one of those, okay, everyone's seen it now with Debo. But what did he finish with? Something like 70+? It was stupid. It was so stupid. I think he hit the over 28.5 on one rush. This is how I feel about Siakam. He can hit his over on assists and a half. And they're still hovering around there. So I love a Raptors bet builder right now that constantly includes teasing Siakam's number. And you can tease it either up or down or whatever. I'm going to play Siakam's assist number tonight at 5.5. And that's the way I'm going to put it moving forward in my every Raptors game parlay. Pascal Siakam over 5.5 assists. You know what else I like? Fred VanVleet to score. The guy shoots a billion threes. So for you to not get 20 points from Fred is kind of just a miraculous thing at this point with the volume that he's taking. So I like teasing Fred's number to over 19.5. Blake has a different theory with it that I've been considering tweaking, which is just taking Fred on the overhitting threes and teasing that one.
Yeah, but it's something... up to 3.5 now. Yeah. It was kicking at 2.5 for a while.
I know.
It's too rich now.
That's why. And so that's why I'm going to stick with teasing Fred VanVleet's number in a bet builder to over 19.5 points. So Fred VanVleet, over 19.5 points.
Pascal has hit that 10 of his last 12, by the way.
Yep. Pascal Siakam, over 5.5 assists. And now, the new addition to this parlay is Precious Achiuwa and getting his rebounds. Because Precious's entire role right now is get boards. Like, that's... If you're watching these Raptors games, they're essentially, like, giving them the Russell Westbrook treatment where they go, Precious, you get all the defensive rebounds. And then on the offensive end, he doesn't have role chemistry with anybody. It's just a fact. Like, he just doesn't have that. You know how he's making himself useful? Hanging around the basket, trying to tip the rock, trying to get it, and trying to bang on the glass. I kind of like Boucher's numbers, too, but I still don't really trust Boucher, and they all kind of have to come on the offensive side for me. So I just look at Precious Achiuwa as basically a lock to be getting 10 rebounds a night while Kem Birch is out, given the minutes, given the role they have to lean on him with. So Precious Achiuwa over 7.5 rebounds, that is the lock-in. Precious over 7.5 rebounds, Pascal over 5.5 assists, Fred VanVleet over 19.5 points. As long as Kem Birch is out and those three players are healthy, I'm banging that every single night. It's the everyday Raptors bet.
So we're a little tight here before Wake and Rake, but just quickly, Luka is plus 320 for a triple-double tonight. He's done it twice in six meetings with the Raptors in his career, averages 24-9-9 against the Raptors. I pulled some numbers yesterday. Under Nick Nurse, the Raptors have allowed 50% more triple-doubles than an average team because they're so thirsty for letting other, like getting the ball out of star players' hands. Luka's been really good against the Raptors. Plus 320 on a Luka triple-double. Pure value-wise is probably right around the right spot.
Maybe just $5.
But, yeah, if you are a Raptor fan, you probably know that's coming. Okay, we gotta lock in Wake and Rake picks before we go here. Ailish, let's start with you.
Oh, God. I'm going to go Leafs in money line.
All right.
Let's do it. Go Leafs,
Leafs
go.
In the money line.
Yep, go Leafs go. I love it. I want it.
JD?
I got to tell you, tonight is a... This is just a nightmare slate for me because there's so many games that I like that I know I'm going to lose a ton of money. That's where I'm at with this. But I'm going to go with the Charlotte Hornets plus 4.5 at the Boston Celtics. I don't like that line for Boston. I know that the Celtics have been better lately, but so have the Hornets. And to me, plus 4.5 is just too much value. I am actually probably going to play this on the money line, but in terms of our best bet, I think I'm going to take the 4.5 points. I'm going to ride this one here. So yeah, give me the Hornets plus 4.5 at the Boston Celtics.
Yeah, no real injury flags there. Kelly Oubre and Marcus Smart are both questionable, but
nope.
That more or less evens out. So Hornets plus 4.5. I was really, really tempted to just keep riding the Cavs as a group. We've hit them.
I saw it and I thought about it.
We've gone Cavs spread four times in the last 8 Wake and Rakes, and they've all hit. They are minus 3 at home against a Chicago team that is regressing dramatically and has no Zach LaVine, no Lonzo Ball, no Patrick Williams, Derek Jones Jr., Javonte Green. And I know that some of those names don't move the needle a ton, but when you say them in that order and it's like this guy and his replacement's out and his replacement's out and his replacement's out. No Lamar Stevens on the other side, but the Cavs are back to being against the spread Kings and the Bulls are 3-7 in their last 10. I am not going to go that way just for the sake of I don't know. It feels a little cheap to just bang the Cavs that much.
No.
So I am going to, JD, I'm going to take a risk you and I talked about over text of we don't have a feel for the Wizards and they're all over the place. But the Nets are plus 2 at Washington in a game where Kyrie and Harden are both expected to play. Neither's on the injury report. You don't have Kevin Durant, but you still have Kyrie Irving and James Harden against a very bad Washington team. Like, so bad that that over-under for that game is up at 231.5.
Yeah. Yeah, Blake.
So I'm going to take Nets there. You could go money line plus 110 if you want the extra value. They're plus 2, and that's what I'll lock in on the Wake and Rake just for safety. But I really don't like the Wizards, even though I like we've talked about, JD, we don't have a great feel for them.
Okay, I got to tell you something. I looked at the lines this morning, and you know how this the Wake and Rake for me is so much about, like, how does my gut feel and then looking at the numbers, right? And I love Brooklyn there. Like, I couldn't believe that line. I was staring at it all morning. I thought for sure that Kyrie or Harden, one of those two guys, was out to justify this. Like, Washington sucks. They suck. It's just that I've been betting against Washington sucking, and then sometimes they win, and I hate them for it. And then when I fade them, they end up coming through. Like, I've been just so bad with Washington that I feel like this is the college basketball pick where it's like, for the greater good, I have to not bet it and just let Blake bet it and not mush the damn Washington Wizards, who I have not... It's so funny, too, because, again, when I went to that game, the story Ailish loves that I tell every day, but when I went to the Wizards game, I made a ton of money betting on them as the home team, right? Like, they won. It was a clear. It was a walk-away. They were red-hot to start the season. I was betting them all the time. The Wizards were my first love of the year from a gambling standpoint, and they've betrayed me. They've betrayed me so hard. I will say this, too. I'm switching to the Cleveland Cavaliers. I'm switching it because you know why? I actually thought one of you was going to take the Cavs, and the only reason that I walked away from them was to give space to the two of you. So I will be locking in the Cleveland Cavaliers money line. Yeah. Here's the fact about the Bulls. They suck, and Zach LaVine is their best player. I'm sorry, DeMar. I love you, but Zach is their best player, and I hate to admit that because I've never been a Zach LaVine guy, but they've just suffered too many losses, and they are just... They are getting by on name brand, and I love that. Those are my favorite bets, and it's why I'm taking the Hornets too tonight, is that, like, name brand matters in gambling. And it's like, if you can find the knockoff, you're going to get the same value. And that's where I'm at with this. You're getting the knockoff at name brand. Like, it's a name brand price, knockoff value. Give me our knockoff version, the Cleveland Cavaliers, the true Kings of the East.
All right, so Cavs minus three, the fifth time in 9 days. The Wake and Rake includes our Cleveland Cavaliers and EG legend Kevin Pangos. Cavs minus three, Nets plus two, Toronto Maple Leafs. That's your Wake and Rake for January 19th.
Who's guarding Evan Mobley in this game? Like, it's like Vucevic?
You are.
It's going to have a billion points. Him and Jared Allen are going to feast tonight. This is going to be a feast.
Yeah, definitely looking at their rebounding and shot blocking props.
Oh, my God,
well.
Yes.
I don't have them handy, but keep an eye on those. Let's take a break. Let that Wake and Rake get locked in.